On the 36th week of the Serie A season, Juventus won their 36th Serie A title. And I've got to say, no one is really that shocked. This is the Serie Awesome podcast, and I'm Mina Rizzucchi. And as ever, I'm joined by Gav Marcotti and Nikki Bandini as we run down on all the news and the activities that have happened in Serie A this week. And that, of course, includes Juventus winning their 9th consecutive title. So much stuff going on in Milan as they finally confirm Stefano Pioli. And, of course, all the others, including Roma, Lazio back to being their best. But we have to start off at the top and with the team whose colours I am wearing today, in case you haven't yet noticed, Juventus. Were you guys in any way shocked by this, or were you shocked that they didn't win this against Udinese?
I was shocked that they hadn't wrapped it up earlier. I mean, you would think, but then if you've seen them play, it's not surprising that, you know, since the restart, they've obviously had serious issues. What impressed me, and I mean, I wrote in my column last week, was there was that moment against Sampdoria towards the end of the first half where Danilo starts. Sorry?
I read your column. I know this.
Well, you know where I'm going with this. Danilo starts and gets injured. On comes Bernardeschi. No biggie. It's Danilo. Dybala comes off. Uh-oh, there goes arguably your most important player since the restart. And it's still nil-nil, and Sampdoria have won 5 of 7, and they're safe, and they have that, you know, we don't have a care in a world attitude. And, you know, you wonder, is this going to be another tough spot? And who's there G-ing everybody on? It's Cristiano Ronaldo. And I saw him do something I've never seen before in football. I guess he wants to, like, you know, urge his teammates forward and try to catch Sampdoria off guard. He takes a throw-in from behind the advertising hoarding. I thought, you know, just a symbolic gesture, but I thought that really spoke volumes. And then later on, of course, it's Cristiano who has that finish off a set piece. And you might look at it and say that was easy. You know, and Pjanic squaring the ball. But, man, it was also Cristiano fooling the defenders into think he's going to go into the box, attack the box, and hitting the ball first time with such power and such accuracy. I thought, in terms of technical ability, that was absolutely tremendous. And yeah, I thought that was a special Cristiano moment.
Yeah, I think that free kick, I think we'll come back to Sadie because there's going to be more motivation we should talk about Ronaldo, but I do think that free kick really, to me, like, screamed a bit Maurizio Sarri in a way that many things haven't in this run to the title. I think people forget that when Sarri first came into the public consciousness, when he was first making his breakthrough in Serie A, set pieces were what everyone talked about. He was the Mr. 33, which supposedly referred to this notebook he had of 33 different plays and set pieces. In fact, that was a made-up number, but he did have a sort of big repertoire of free kicks and set pieces. So that was, I thought, a little moment of Sarri training ground magic. But as Gab says, nothing straightforward about that finish from Ronaldo. It was a brilliant finish. And in the end, when we pick apart this title, when we ask how have Juventus got, given that we're all quite unimpressed with them, given that they have thrown away 18 points from winning positions this season, given that they've conceded 38 goals, which is nearly double what they conceded in the first season they won the title under Conte. It's a lot more than they've conceded in any of these previous 8 Scudetti. I think there's a few players that you obviously look at in explaining how they won anyway. Dybala is one of them. I think Szczesny might be one of them, but the most obvious one is Cristiano. It's Ronaldo. He was, when they needed him, he was always there.
That's exactly what it is. I think it's sort of the Scudetto that belongs to Ronaldo and Dybala, to be frank, because they really have been the two players that have made a massive difference. You know, it's funny, actually, because when Sarri came on, I've been waiting for these free kicks. You know, I've been waiting for this huge, like, someone dropping their pants, you know, like the Müller did once for Germany. Something that would, you know, distract, something outrageous. And I'm like, yeah, there we go. That's it. This is what Sarri is here for, other than the beautiful play. But it was just kind of like, you know, defense sucks. And apparently he works on it all the time. And of course he does, because, you know, he cares about it. It's just really complicated. So none of the players, and Bonucci admitted to this, have really taken to his commands and instructions very easily. And, you know, there's been problems going forward. On a personal level, I'm ecstatic for Maurizio Sarri. for somebody who left their job in banking because they couldn't find fulfillment, something I did, although I didn't find the success that he did, but you know what I mean. To then take eventually.
You're not 61 yet, Nina. You've got time.
You're right. To achieve, you know, like the ninth Scudetto for Juventus and one where you're training the likes of Ronaldo, where you have gotten the best out of Dybala, where, let's be honest, he was put on the market. I was one of the people that was like, get him out of my club, you know. There's been a lot of talk about what he's done and how he's improved Juventus or hasn't improved Juventus. But there are some things that he did very well. And so we can't deny that. And he did come up across very strong competition in Lazio and Inter, albeit not as strong as we had hoped for in the end. Okay, it just sort of fell apart towards the end. But I'm going to be really honest. I'm still not thrilled with him being the coach. You know, there's
Was there some symbolism there in the fact that he wasn't there when the players all celebrated on the pitch?
That's because he wanted to have a cigarette. Apparently.
But it was a really interesting one because I totally agree. It's a thing that was immediately struck me, and it wasn't like he was forced. He ran away. Maybe isn't the right term.
He did. Yeah.
He disappeared. Like he immediately went to the tunnel.
But he said that was because like he wanted to sort of leave them on the pitch, try to run and try to grab a cigarette as soon as possible. And if you notice, when he did do his press conference, Chesney came over and offered him a lit cigarette because he said, you know, you deserve this. And it's not that I don't think the players don't love him, you know, but there's just so much to the side. Like you mentioned, Nikki, about the fact that the defense has conceded 38 goals, you know, and they've lost 18 from stronger commanding positions. Allegri lost 6 last year. That's a huge difference to go from 6 to 18 points dropped, you know? These are the things that make me worry. And even if I hope he does very well in the Champions League. And he has obviously had to change so much, but there's just, I look at this team and I think defensively, I'm always worried. I cannot believe that I'm watching Juventus side against Sampdoria and I'm not actually sure of a win, even after that wonderful free kick. I haven't watched Juventus and been scared in so long. But now I watch this team and all I ever think is, when is the collapse going to happen? And I don't feel like I ever had that under Allegri or Antonio Conte, to be frank.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true of this team. The points lost from winning positions, the way they played even against Samp, encouraged that thought. I do think it's funny with Sarri how he blends humility with arrogance. And maybe that's all managers. It's certainly lots of brilliant people I know seem to have that tread that line sometimes. But in the changing room on Bonucci's Instagram video, saying, "Well, if you guys won with me, you must really be good." But then in the press conference, he also, someone asked him about winning. He said, "Oh, there aren't that many managers who have won in Italy and in Europe." And actually, Max Allegri hasn't won a European trophy to go with his Serie A title. So, I don't know. Yeah, I think shades of grey as there are with everything. But
I know where you're going with this, Nikki. Max Allegri hasn't competed in the Europa.
No, I agree. I know which of those two managers that I think is a stronger manager. So we're clear. I know which of them it is, and it's not Sarri.
But look, I mean, I this is the same point we've been talking every week, and this isn't going to be Sarri's team until Cristiano Ronaldo's there. Cristiano Ronaldo does not exist, cannot exist in a Sarri team. That is a Sarri team the way it's supposed to be, that lives up to the idea of Sarri. So that said, you get this kind of half Sarri. It worked out for them domestically this year. We'll see how it goes in the Champions League. But, you know, somebody said if you're going to have a revolution, you got to be all in. You know, you can't just do it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Juve did it a little bit. They still won Serie A because they have a wage bill that's twice as high as everybody else because of the culture, because of Dybala, because of Cristiano, whatever. But I don't know. If you're going to continue like this with Cristiano, I think you really should consider going in a different direction in terms of manager. I don't think it's going to happen at this stage, even if they get humiliated in the Champions League, because there just isn't that much time between them there and the start of next season. But I think there are lessons to be learned about what happened this year, and that, you know, if they don't do something next year, you could see Cristiano spend 3 years, $375 million committed over 4 seasons, and not get to the goal that you wanted to get to.
I wanted to ask Gab like one really quick question, because I read the column as well, of course. We all read your column, Gab. And the way you wrote it made it read to me like you think the question of whether Sadie is back next season or not is still an open question. Is that something that you think, or have I read something that wasn't intended?
Let me make it very clear. I haven't spoken to anybody at the club who said, oh, Sadie might not be back next year. Let me be very, very clear on that. But equally, when you look at this, I think there is a chance. If things go really, really badly, if this turns out, you know, if Cristiano has a great season and at the end, and things go badly in the Champions League, and Cristiano says, you know what, this sucks. I don't like the way we play. I don't like this. I don't like that. Can we revisit the situation? Then I think you would have to look at it. And I think Cristiano would be right. Cristiano was sold Juventus with Max Allegri. Instead, in year two, he gets Juventus with Maurizio Sarri. But he doesn't even get proper Maurizio Sarri. He gets Maurizio Sarri trying to do an awful Max Allegri impression. I mean, that is the reality, I think, of Juve right now. And it's not Sarri's fault. It's not Cristiano's fault. It's just a question that I think you need to think about and you need to address for next season. Because otherwise, there's no reason not to believe it's not going to be more of the same with Bonucci a year older and Cristiano a year older and Higuain hanging around because you signed him that stupid contract. You know, all these things are going to be back next year. And they look, here's Archer. Okay, great. Then what? There's Kulusevski. Okay, fine. But it's still the Sarri-Cristiano dynamic.
But, okay, so I haven't been too great to Sarri, but I want to sort of look for hopeful things going forward, because I don't think this is a team devoid of that. I mean, I think he has his excuses. We've already talked about the fact that the team is not balanced enough for him. And like you said, you know, when you're going to go for a revolution, then you have to commit fully, which they didn't do on at least a management level. But what we can say is that this has also been a really tough season, because we have to take into consideration the coronavirus. So it's like you're trying to change things and how they play the game, but you don't have enough time to really spend with the players, because most of the time you're just trying to recuperate to play the next game. So I feel like Sarri hasn't even been able to spend time with his team to change the way that they're doing. And when we have seen them play well, which is a few and far between, like against Inter, like against Napoli, they were fantastic. And maybe perhaps if they do have another season together, they'll be really, really good if we can get some players in. So I don't want to be too harsh on
it. But the thing is, Mina, you make great points, but they won't, because they're going to have a very short preseason, and then they're going to have a compressed season because of the Euros.
So you think this is still going to be really... I know.
It's nobody's fault, but that's the reality, right? They won't have that opportunity, and they're losing Pjanic, which means I'll have to figure out, Bentancur is going to have to learn the position very quickly, or we'll have to bring somebody else in. So there's going to be a lot of upheaval. You know, that there's not a situation where Sarri will suddenly have a giant block of time where he can go and teach again. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. That is also true. But my issue is that if you want to replace him with Pochettino, I don't think there's going to be a quick turnaround and we're going to win the Champions League under Pochettino, you know? So I feel like there's also got to be, if you're going to change Sarri for somebody, firstly, I'm always I always want consistency and stability. I don't want to turn into Milan. But my issue is if you are going to change this coach for somebody, then it's really Zinedine Zidane or bust, or unless you want to go back to Allegri, which I'm happy with. So, but you cannot change for Pochettino, for other unknowns, because these things take time. And right now, Juventus don't have time because they have Ronaldo on this set contract and they're trying to milk it for all it's worth. And the only way to milk it for all it's worth is to get the Champions League. And I look at players, you know, like Mandzukic and Emre Can that lost. And I really think Emre Can would have been so important towards this end of season run. But, you know, there's mistakes that have been made. And
Mina, you raised Allegri there, right? Mm. Let's try to role play Max Allegri. Pretend you're Max Allegri, right? Mm. You've taken this sabbatical. You're waiting for jobs to open up.
Yeah.
There's a possibility, I suppose, Paris Saint-Germain may or may not open up. We'll see how that goes. But apart from that, the kind of jobs that you would expect, there's not really going to be any job openings. And there's going to be less time because, obviously, it's a shorter off-season. Which then means you're on the sideline again, which means either you have to be out for two seasons, which is a very long time for a manager in the prime of his career to be out, or you step in mid-season if somebody screws up, in which case you're taking over a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if he did get a call from your buddy Andrea, whether he might think, you know what, this is pretty good when I was there, and I want to work with Kulusevski and De Ligt. And I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. But to me, that seems more probable than Zinedine Zidane, or at least Zinedine Zidane right now, right, at the end of this Champions League.
I'm seeing the whole Gap master plan coming together here, which involves Juventus losing to Lyon so they have more time, get Allegri and have the full preseason. That's what you need.
Would they be better if I with Allegri back or with another year, Sarri, Nikki? It's a very straight question.
I think I'd take Allegri. Thank you, honestly, I agree with you guys on that.
Allegri?
Yeah.
Really, both of you would go for Allegri. I thought I was his number one fan, but it turns out that I have others with me.
No, I thought it was... I understood changing when Juventus decided to change because there is such a thing, I think, as managers going stale. I think that happens. I think sometimes you need to shake things up. Again, as you said in this, Mina, lots of sort of enthusiasm for Maurizio Sarri as an individual and his story and everything he's achieved. But if you're asking me, do I think he's a better manager than Max Allegri? I don't. And I think Max Allegri didn't get a fair appraisal from some people at Juventus for quite how remarkable the work he was that he'd done there, getting to the Champions League final twice with resources that didn't necessarily demand to go to a Champions League final. But we've done our big Juve bit.
Just one quick thing. Like, if they're really smart, they would just have this little deal with Real Madrid. You know, Madrid can keep Zidane, we get back Allegri, and then we exchange at the end of the season, next season, you know?
I'm sure Real Madrid are dying to have Max Allegri. They're looking to say, oh, this is exactly who we want. We just won the title with Zidane, but hey, no, Max Allegri.
No, but this is the thing. If Zidane wants to leave them, which is what I think he wants to do eventually, because he does want to go and try different experiences, then what better way to do... Who's better to take on after Zidane than Allegri? Tell me. So for them, it works out.
So before we completely drop Juventus, the one other conversation, I guess, that's relevant is the Capo Cannoniere, which is still up for grabs. But Immobile, having not had the best time since the restart, got a hat-trick this week for Lazio. Ronaldo only got one, hit the crossbar with the penalty. Are we believing in Ciro again? He's already got now, he's already broken the record for most goals by an Italian player in a Serie A season. He needs two more to match Higuain's record for any player. Is it his to lose now?
It's weird because I was reading when, you remember in the Coppa Italia when Ronaldo missed the penalty, right? And it was like all about like, you know, his bond with Pinsolio and how they together they're going to work on this. And Gazzetta and Corriere and all of them had said that, you know, Ronaldo only ever misses one penalty a year. That's all he ever does. And he's got it out of his system now. And I'm thinking, all right, cool. It's out of his system. It's not. I mean, thank God it wasn't an important penalty, but it's not out of his system. So,
why do they say this stupid stuff?
I know. I don't know. You know, like, there was literally four articles dedicated to this, by the way, that I remember thinking, Jesus. Anyway, back to this point. So, and I was watching Lazio and their capitulation, really, since the restart of football. They started off, obviously, well. And I just thought, it's so tough for Ciro Immobile. I really cannot see him getting any goals that are just not penalties.
Just more and more penalties.
But then he really did. I mean, Lazio, just against Hellas Verona, are a very good side. Obviously they've had their problems and they don't have any of they've had to shake up their defense a lot, a lot of absences for Ivan Kordic. But I still think, like, that was Lazio that I remember. You know, this was when Lazio are the way that they are, and Luis Alberto is managing to provide all this beauty going forward, and then you've got Immobile actually converting, and I mean, his shots, his confidence, everything's back. And now I just think Ronaldo's just not going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think playing Verona, whose race is run, also helps. I mean, it wouldn't be surprised if in the last two games, well, with Juve less so, because they're playing Roma, obviously, on the last day of the season. But as far as Lazio are concerned, I wouldn't be surprised if we get a little bit more of that. But
come on, we can't even depend on Ronaldo scoring against Sampdoria.
No, well, He did, though, right? So, but yeah, no, I take your point. But I don't know. We've talked about the penalties and stuff, and those are gaudy numbers. I just want to reinforce the fact, though, that Ciro Immobile has 20 goals from open play in Serie A, not for the first time. That is a tremendous amount of goals. And Cristiano has, I think, is it 19 he's got from open play at age 35? That is also an absurd amount of goals.
Amazing.
Given his age. So let's all get snarky about the inflated goals totals and the inflated penalties, sure. But then let's take them away and recognize what these two guys have done. And it's pretty remarkable. I mean, Immobile, I think, has a legit shot at winning the European Golden Boot if you're into those types of silly awards. So, yeah.
there is like an interesting sort of side thought of this, which is that actually if you were being strategic as Juventus now and you actually could make this decision without upsetting him, surely the decision would be, Cristiano, you're not playing these next two games. Go sit down, have a week off, because you need to play against Lyon and you need to be well-rested. But do you think, like,
oh
with
God.
This... Yeah.
Oh, that's naughty, Nikki, putting that out there.
Am I wrong? Like,
no, you know what? If it were somebody else, you're right. But then I think obviously Cristiano wants to play because he likes his goals, because he likes playing football, because he's 35 years old and he knows he has a finite number of games left. And, you know, Sarri and Juve's fitness guys would say, oh, but the way Cristiano is, he needs to play to stay fit and get fit, and that's more important. And to have him at his best against Lyon, he needs to play these games. So it's a losing battle. But I totally get where you're coming from.
It's weird, though, but I actually almost agree with that, because I just feel like whenever he has a rest, it's not that great. I don't know. I feel like he needs to always be in the action, chasing his dreams, chasing his passion. And I just think that if he ends the race having won it, that will do wonders for him going forward. I mean, either way, he's always somebody to depend on, right, for the Champions League. But I personally wouldn't rest him either, if I'm being honest. And anyway, Sadie's too scared of him, so he won't even try that. Every time he tries to talk to him about playing in the middle or taking him off, you can see his nerves, you know? Another reason why I just feel like, Zidane, where are you? Come back. Anyway, but... What about Atalanta? If we are going to talk about losing a player, like, you know, what Juventus would lose if they lose Ronaldo. I mean, PSG just lost Kylian Mbappe, and that's a huge thing for them. I thought Giampiero Gasperini reacted really well when asked about this, and he said, well, honestly, I want to be the best, so I feel really bad for the fact that they've lost a player of this magnitude. It was a horror tackle on poor Mbappe, but does this make stuff easier for Atalanta, or are you like me and you thought they were always going to win anyway?
Who can stop them, Mina? Who can stop them?
Who can?
Yeah. Of course it makes it easier. It's a relative term, but you take away one of the best players in the world from a team, they're probably going to be less good. I think that PSG probably will feel like they've still got some options up front. They're not exactly without, but yeah, I mean, it's a tough story for PSG, and in football terms, stepping back from what you just said, which is true, you know, it's not nice to see people get hurt, but in football terms, of course, it's to Atalanta's benefit.
It's good news for Atalanta, obviously, in the football sphere. PSG are still favourites. Let's not forget Di Maria is also out. I think the fact that it's 90 minutes is going to, rather than over two legs, gives Atalanta perhaps a little bit of an edge because things get more unpredictable. But let's be clear, Paris Saint-Germain are the better, deeper team, even without Mbappe and Di Maria, and they will be favorites.
Do you still feel that way after you watch them against Saint-Etienne? Do you still feel like, knowing what the defects are of this PSG team, knowing the strengths of Atalanta, and we discussed this last week about, you know, the pressing game and everything, I just thought PSG looked a little bit of a mess, to be honest.
They're favorites. Like, I'm not saying they'll definitely win. They're favorites because they match up very well. And if you want to go and press PSG, good luck. I mean, it's not... I think obviously Atalanta will press, but it's not going to be an all-out press the way we've seen before. I think he's going to pick his spots because I think going all-out press for 90 minutes against Paris Saint-Germain is suicidal.
I think we're getting a little bit ahead with the Champions League, which is exciting. It's the next thing to move on to, but there is still some other big news in Serie A that we should talk about, which is since we last did this podcast, Milan have, and I'm going to give some dues here. Gamp was sort of, I think, even on the last podcast saying, don't assume this Ragnik thing is in the bag. It really might not be. And Milan have now nailed down that decision. Stefano Pioli is going to be the manager next season, which I think, given the tone of our conversations we were having beforehand, we all think is a good decision, right?
It's a good decision, short. I mean, I think it's a good decision in light of the background to it, in light of the fact that Ragnik wanted to come in and he wanted to be technical director, director of football, head of recruitment, chief scout, and coach, and probably ball boy and physio as well. You know, he wanted the sort of power at a club which nobody in modern football has anymore, but nobody. And then nobody's had, you know, since the last days of, as I said before, since the last days of Wenger when things went badly, or before that, Sir Alex, except Sir Alex achieved a hell of a lot before he got that kind of power. And I think the ownership realized this and they said, you know, this is a colossal gamble. We're all for being creative and thinking outside the box, but this is really a step too far. And that coupled with the way Stefano Pioli was playing, they still have to address the fundamental elephant in the room, which is their recruitment and the clarity of the type of players they want to recruit. You know, right now, as we speak, we have Gigi Donnarumma and Zlatan Ibrahimovic trying to renegotiate new contracts. Donnarumma has a very bad contract in the sense that Milan have no leverage, and I assume he will extend probably with some sort of cheap buyout clause. It looks like Ibrahimovic is going to get a new deal. You know, these are the two souls of Milan. You know, do we go further and push the youth and really show faith in them, or do we kind of go for the safety blankets? They need to sort that out. They need to figure out who's in charge, and I think, and they need some consistency at the top.
I think there needs to be a united front going forward and one way of thinking, because I feel like, you know, obviously the problem started because Ivan Gazidis had one direction and sort of wanting to rebuild Milan, but doing it in a way that makes them sustainable and investing in youth and taking their time before they become, you know, sort of the champions that they want to be. Whereas I think that what you had with the likes of Paolo Maldini and Boban was that they wanted it to go back to Milan straight away as soon as possible to be the great Milan that we remember, that we know. And so it was investing in this kind of thing where this is not really our tradition, this is not our DNA, we want to play this type of football, we want these types of players. Now there needs to be and I thought that Gazidis was supposed to unite this. I mean, it was the one, like, prop, like, as in bringing in, sorry, Ralf Rangnick was going to be the idea that they commit to, this one man who rebuilds everything. And sort of now we're back to getting a coach, and I'm obviously really thrilled for Stefano Pioli because they have been amazing, but does that mean that they're all united now on what Milan should do going forward? Secondly, weirdly enough, when I was reading some of the things that were coming out of Germany, they kept saying he's refused the role of technical director. There doesn't seem to be this all-encompassing role of, like, technical director and sporting director and coach and kit man and whatever it is. And then Italy is saying, well, that was what Gazidis offered him. So I don't actually know, and I don't know. Do you guys know? I mean, Gabba.
Yeah, I know. That's what he wanted. He wanted to.
He wanted everything.
I mean, whatever you
and
read
was he
from
offered
Germany,
that?
Yeah, that
Kicker
is.
Seems to refuse this. Yeah.
Kicker schmicker. I mean, they spoke to him from the start. He said from the start, look, I have a very good job here in Leipzig. I do enjoy coaching. I think I can make a real difference coaching. Obviously, he coached them for a year and then, you know, is like a placeholder for Nagelsmann. But he wants to go back to that while also bringing all his nous in terms of being technical director and recruitment guru and whatever. And I think the club were definitely open to it. As we know, he didn't sign anything despite all these people reporting that it was done. And I think over time, the club came to the realization, this is like, is this really a good idea? Is this really what we want? Now, obviously, I think they were also influenced by public opinion, by the fact that Stefano Pioli was getting stronger, by the fact that it's pretty obvious that if Rangnick came, Paolo Maldini wouldn't stick around, which then would ratchet the pressure up further.
But is this also based on the fact that he also wanted to rescue the club and now felt like there wasn't much to rescue because they were doing so well?
No, I think that's nonsense. I don't think he wanted to coach the club. He wanted to coach and run the club. He wanted to have Sir Alex-esque powers at the club. And I think the dude's 62 years old, right? Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, I think maybe you do it. But to do it now, especially when the club is finishing the season on a high, and the guy is a difficult personality, and he doesn't speak the language, and of course Gazidis doesn't quite speak the language either, you know, you risk ratcheting up pressure. You can sell, I think, the fan base on a rebuild project if Milan finished the season really badly and it was all a disaster.
Yeah.
But it's not. So at that point, they opted for Pioli. But I think you're correct in what you said before. They need to decide who they want to be and what they want to be. And I'll tell you what, this Donnarumma Ibrahimovic negotiation is just absolutely horrendous, because they have zero leverage. And it just shows you how important it is and what an awful job the people before them did, especially in giving Donnarumma that contract. He's the third highest paid goalkeeper in the world, and he's 21 years old. I think he turns 22. That's absolutely mad. It's like, where do you go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that with Donnarumma, who is represented, of course, by Mino Raiola, Raiola has run rings around the club, and there has been a really, I will say, some sympathy for the club on that, just because, especially at the time when that contract was being done, so much was so bad that to lose your one sort of hope was a position you really didn't want to be in, right? And now, not that, I mean, you still don't want to lose him, you want to keep hold of him, and it's going to be complicated to work out how that happens. But actually now, if it all went the worst way and Donnarumma left, I wouldn't look at this club and think everything is gone, right? Whereas at the time, I think the people in charge might have felt like, if we can't get this right, then we really haven't got anything to hold on to. I think in terms of rebuild projects, I mean, it is complicated for Milan. And I think one of the things that I was wondering about when it looked like Ranieri was coming in is, okay, Ranieri wants to come in, he wants to impose his imprint on this club. How much money is there going to be to do that at a time when all of football is struggling because of the pandemic? Milan, I think, just renegotiated their sponsorship deal with Emirates, and you know, for years and years and years in football, all these sponsorship deals just go up, right? They just go up. I think this one's gone down by something like 3 or 4 million euros a year. So there is less money coming in. And there's a real possibility, which I think this sort of thought has been kicked down the road for a long time, but it's a real possibility that most of next season gets played with, if not empty stadiums, certainly not full stadiums as well. So that is going to impact club revenues. And so Pioli is a very convenient option for Milan right now. He's pragmatic. Yes, I suppose what maybe you were hinting at there, Gab, I didn't want to put words in your mouth, is that you feel Milan still need an identity, still need something, and perhaps Pioli isn't someone you think of with that, because as we've talked about, he's a genuinely adaptable, pragmatic manager. But I think maybe there's enough of an identity right now, and yeah, Ibrahimovic, separate conversation, but there's enough an identity right now in just the fact that you have got a young, flexible core with a manager who is showing that he can get the best out of those players as individuals and as a collective. I mean, there's a lot to like in this team. Mm. We talked a lot about the Kessié and Bennacer sort of as a starting point in midfield. Those are two players who are, what, 23, 22?
Yeah. Throw in Romagnoli, Donnarumma, and Romagnoli, and that's five of your 11 who are all on the younger side. Obviously,
so you don't need to tear this up and start over, which is what I was worried about with Rangnick. He comes in, wants to tear it up and start over. And
I don't think he would have torn it up, because necessarily with the younger players, or he would have demanded absurd amounts of money, because, you know, even at Leipzig, if you look, they spent big by Bundesliga standards, by non-Dortmund Bayern Bundesliga standards, but they weren't spending 30 million on like 27-year-old guys. Mm-hmm. I think they would have had the availability for that. Now they're going to have to be clever. But again, the key is they got to get past this idea that, oh, we need winners, we need people who've done it, we need veterans to bring experience, give me Luca Spiglia, or I don't want to keep picking on him, but you know, guys
you
like
do
that.
Always pick on him there.
No, but that was the mentality, you know, and this idea of, oh, we need investment. You know, the reality is the golden age of Milan and the big investments, that's nearly 20 years ago. Even at the end of Carlo Ancelotti's regime, this was a team that was, you know, going along and taking gambles and squeezing as much as they could out of older players and stuff like that. That's the reality of it. they haven't been that team since the 90s. And obviously there was no financial fair play back then. So this is what Milan have to adapt to. But again, as a little bit as with Juve, you can't do this in, you know, you have to choose a path here, as Mina said earlier. You can't do this halfway.
I want a Gab Marcotti starting 11 of most overpaid Serie A players. Because I feel like there's a couple in there already. Biglia and Ramsey, I'm certain, make that list. I want to know who else is in Gab's. It's in Cavs 11.
Maybe that's one for next week. I'll put it together.
Yes, do that.
I was asked this question just this morning about who can end the Juventus run of Serie A titles. And clearly the most obvious answer to that is Inter. It is. They're the closest team right now and they're making the right signings. But if you're asking me after that, who I think is, you know, capable of in the next few years... Structurally, Milan are better set up to do it than other teams. Lazio are just a much smaller budget. It just is. Atalanta, it's a wonderful story, but it can't go on forever. I hope it can, but it can't. Like, the logic in your brain tells you it can't. Milan are a club with a big enough, set up, the stadium, the international revenue, all of those things to eventually aim for it. Whether or not they can do it immediately, hey, it's a big step. It requires Juventus to slip. It requires everything to come together, but... After Inter, they are the team that should be doing it. So we'll see.
So it's Inter, hopefully challenging Juventus. And if it's not them, then it'll be Milan in a few years' time. Or maybe they'll be challenging each other because Sarri's ruined it too much. We don't know. But moving on, let's do a quick roundup. Obviously, you know, like Inter managed to win. They are doing very well. Are you guys in any way... It was really interesting because I was reading the story that said, oh, if they didn't, you know, lose these games against the following teams and then listed the teams, they would have been able to win this title. And I'm thinking, that is just like the stupidest thing to say. It's like if Juventus also didn't throw away their five games, you know, their five losses, they would have also won. But are you guys as amazed by Antonio Conte, or do you feel there's a lot more work that needs to go into this when it comes to Inter? And if it's, you know, what about Roma going forward? I know I'm just throwing teams going forward, but I just feel like, you know, room for growth. When you think of how much money has been spent, who are you impressed with?
I mean, I feel like I've said everything that there is to say about Inter right now. I think Hakimi is a good signing for next season and helps them, right? I think that makes them a better team because Conte's best teams always rely on width. And I hope
that... Do you trust them next year?
Oh, the same as everyone. I'm waiting for my question. I think is the same as anyone who's watched Conte at different jobs, which is how long can Conte keep it together? If Conte can keep it together, this team should be very good next season. They're already showing they've already improved. They're a better team objectively in points, in performances, in any sensible measure. They're a better team than they were the last two seasons. Okay, so they're going the right direction. You're adding pieces that are good. Hakimi, potentially others. But can Conte keep his emotions in check enough? Will he blow up and demand things that the club won't provide? Will the club provide him with things they shouldn't because they want to keep him calm? These are the questions that will determine whether or not Inter get better next season. On paper, they're well positioned. I know everyone wanted them to challenge all the way to the end of the season because it's more dramatic, but you can't tell me that this has been a season of backwards motion for Inter. It's a season of forward motion, and it's whether or not you can build on it. Roma's a bit more complex. There were times in the season where I really thought they were heading in a positive direction. There have been times when they've been more frustrating. There's pieces that the future of is not certain. Apologies if I'm wrong on this, but I don't think Chris Smalling... something's been arranged for him yet, and if he doesn't come back, that's a loss. He's been good this season. Edin Dzeko may go, and if he doesn't, he's a year older, and they haven't really found the answer of what happens when Dzeko isn't there up front. On the other hand, there's some good stuff happening. Zaniolo's obviously developing when he's not getting in, sort of getting told off for not working hard enough by teammates. I'm encouraged by Fonseca as a manager. I don't know that I believe he's necessarily got all the answers yet. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see their trajectory as clearly as I do Inter's. Inter's trajectory for me is clearly in the right direction as long as your manager doesn't lose the run of it.
So, Gab, do you think it's Roma or Milan who's going to finish in fifth?
Well, I mean, I would assume Milan because Roma, Juve on the last day. I don't know how much difference it really makes other than, I suppose, preliminary rounds in the Europa League or whatnot. But there's no question that it's been a tough season with Roma, and I share pretty much everything that Nikki said. I think they have a tremendous manager in Paolo Fonseca, who's had to deal with a lot of crap. A lot of kids, I think, have improved. Like Chuck, you know, people like Vertu and Diawara in there. But, you know, there's still a ways to go.
Yeah, I do definitely like their formation change, and I definitely think that it's helped them going forward. I didn't sort of understand all the backlash against Fiorentina. I understand that it was a generous penalty, but I do think that Roma was so much better in general and just the way that they're playing their football. I don't know. I trust them to be in the top four, but then I trust Napoli as well. I still think, despite everything I've said before as well, they still need a striker, like a guy who's going to convert all their chances. They keep creating so many, but you know, just in the roundup, let's get to knee-jerk reactions, because I think this is where I want to come in with something about Napoli. Do you guys have your knee-jerks all prepared?
Yes, and I'll get one on Napoli straight away. I cannot believe this Osimhen story is not going away.
I'll tell you what,
because I was sure. I said, this is Nicolas Pepe part two. If they pull this off, I think it's a masterstroke. Because while he is expensive, equally, he's going to slot into Milik's salary slot. They'll get money coming in from other areas, and they're getting a guy who people are legitimately super excited about. So that would really be, I think, potentially a game changer. I don't know if he's going to be phenomenal, but I can tell you very few players at his age have generated as much buzz in Europe.
Can you tell me the figures? Because I keep reading something different like every day. Is it 61 or 81 million that they're planning on paying for him?
I don't know, because for a long time I didn't imagine the figures were right. And I would imagine it's going to be something.
It seems extortionately high.
It should be something probably in the 60 plus bonuses, I would assume. And that would then mean that you might be in a position where you need to shift Koulibaly. But like I said, you take care of his wages with Milik going, and you know the guy is 21 years old, and I think that makes a huge difference.
Nikki, what about you? What is your takeaway from this week?
My knee-jerk reaction after seeing a really very, very, very large number of people responding to me tweeting and posting about Juventus winning the league. Really, really, very large number of people who seem very certain that they could win the league with this Juventus team if they were the manager. my knee-jerk reaction is that some of them need to get off their bums and do it, because, again, Maurizio Sarri was working in a bank 20 years ago. He's shown you how to do it. Go out there, get yourself a job, and climb the ladder. It's not inaccessible. If you've never played football freshly, you've just got to put your money where your mouth is, I guess.
I think it's just because, like, you know, if you've got Ronaldo, people always say that, right? They love telling Zidane that that's why he's won 3 Champions League trophies in a row. And all I'm saying is, why didn't Messi do the same for his coaches? But anyway, my thing
you
was
had
about
to go
it,
there, Mina. You had to ignite, right? That debate again.
Sorry, you know, but it doesn't depend on just having the greatest player. You also have to do something as a coach. That's why Zidane's the best. But did you guys watch the game between Napoli and Sassuolo? That was, for me, like, the most extraordinary thing. I mean, VAR just kept knocking off Sassuolo.
Oh, God, we didn't mention that. 4 penalties. Four goals, not given. All correctly, to be fair, but it was still something.
And this is the thing. It's jarring when you see it, because we're not used to it, but I'd rather they get the decisions correct, and they were all correct. Surely 3 of the 4 were undoubtedly correct.
Yeah, and I love that afterwards in the interview when they were talking to De Zerbi, he was like, well, you know, listen, I do think VAR's made the game better. So even if it means that it worked against us in this match, which was a superb match, by the way. Also because Napoli, they create so much. You just want somebody to just knock them all in. And it was the thing that I had at the start of the season when we were discussing this, when I just said, I just really want them to have like a player like Icardi who would just knock all of those goals in. But of course, you lose something in the way that they play their football. But let's see what happens going forward. Right, okay, that's where we leave it. Of course, join us next week when we see what continues to happen in Serie A and who will be relegated. We didn't even discuss that on this week's show, but we will next time. Thank you to Gab, thank you to Nikki, and I've been Mina. See you then.